Today's show is presented by Prize Picks. Go to prizepicks.com and use code PACKADAY for a $100 deposit match.
Minutes a day, 365 days a year. This is the Pack-A-Day Podcast.
What is up, everybody? Happy Wednesday. Welcome into an all-new episode of the Pack-A-Day Podcast. I'm your host, Andy Herman. You can follow me on Twitter at Andy Herman NFL. You can follow the podcast at Pack-A-Day Podcast. Today, we are talking about superpowers. No, we're not talking about Deadpool or Wolverine. We're not talking about Marvel or DC. We are talking about specific superpowers for your Green Bay Packers. Now, I use this term, obviously, a little bit loosely. What we're looking at today are the traits of this organization, of players within this organization, that make them special, that set them apart, and that can sort of supercharge this team into what hopefully can become a super team, or more specifically, a Super Bowl team. So we're going to be looking at the things that this team and the players on this team do incredibly well, that, like I said, can hopefully propel this team to become something special, maybe in the near future. So let's go over it today. We're going to start off right away with number one on the list. And I'm actually going here with not a player on the team. I'm going with the Packers front office. And more specifically, their ability to find solid to good players almost anywhere. It is uncanny that they can just find players off of practice squads and they can become good players. Rasul Douglas and Bo Melton are examples of that. Alan Lazard is an example of that. Like, they can just serve, and obviously this all goes back to drafting and developing and the whole scouting process from day one when you start scouting these players in college. And then it, you know, goes above and beyond that when you start doing the preseason scouting and the pro personnel group gets involved. But they have the propensity and the ability to find these players anywhere. Practice squads, seventh round picks, like legitimate late round picks, like Rasheed Walker, who can come in and just, he's going to be a good player. And I'm not saying it's 100% hit rate by any stretch of the imagination. Lou Nichols didn't work out. There've been a variety of seventh round picks who have not worked out. That's okay. But the fact that they can still find solid, good, serviceable players at all levels of the draft, in free agency, in street free agency, look at like Daniel Whalen, the punter. He's playing in the XFL. And they're like, yep, we found him. He's going to be our punter from now on. And he's good. Carl Brooks, late round pick, immediately comes in and is a big time contributor on that defense. And I think he's set for even better things in year two. Dontavian Wicks in round five. We talked about Rasheed Walker in round seven. Zach Tom, day three. Romeo Doubs, day three. Guys like Devondre Campbell, who was just chilling, you know, before they signed him to a one-year, $2 million deal a few years ago, and he becomes a first-team All-Pro. Keyshawn Nixon, guy who they signed off the street, who had $0 guaranteed. You know, the bare minimum contract that you can give that guy. He becomes a starting nickel corner, a two-time All-Pro, kick returner, punt returner. He does a little bit of everything. Special teams guy. I would just find that guy. No problem at all. It is really something pretty special. Now, finding great players, finding generational players, All-Pros, Hall of Famers, those are hard things to do. And this team, I think, still needs to do a slightly better job in maybe developing and drafting some of those marquee players that can really propel you to a Super Bowl. But man, my goodness, do they have a real true skill and superpower for finding good talent almost anywhere. Like, I don't even, you know, worry anymore of like, all right, like they're just going to be able to find somebody. I think Goody's been very creative with this as well. I go back to like when they found like Jared Valdir that was still out there. He could, you know, come and be a rotational guy. Rick Wagner, you know, kind of as a mercenary offensive tackle who played really well for them in that season. It's just been really, really impressive. And again, it can be undrafted free agency, street free agency, trades, practice squad signings, all of it. And they can find it. So that to me, and I go back to this too. When I always hear like, oh, the Packers got to make a trade at the trade deadline, or they need to pick up so-and-so player, they need to sign. There's definitely a time and a place for that. There's no question about it. But this league is really, and I talk about this a lot, is about kind of superstar players. And then you've got a huge wide range of sort of good to really good to average players. And then you've got some not as great players, rotational guys, guys that you're constantly sort of rotating through at the bottom end of your roster. Now, like I said, Green Bay does a phenomenal job finding those good players. They're really good at it. But the most of the time, these big time all pro Hall of Fame, like those guys don't come available, certainly at like the trade deadline and things like that. I'm sure there's exceptions that we could go over, but for the most part, you're finding those kind of middle ground players that, yeah, in a pinch could help you if you've got an injury. But I don't even worry about those so much anymore because I have faith in Goody and company that if they need to find a corner in the middle of the year, oh, we'll just pick up Rasul Douglas off of Arizona's practice squad. No sweat. We got this. We know exactly who we want to target. Again, I'm not saying it's 100% success rate, but I think it's as good, if not better, than any other team in the league at finding those players that can come in and help you in pretty much any freaking avenue. And it consistently impresses me because I cannot stress to you enough how hard those things are to do. Teams give up a lot for those good players because they aren't as good at drafting, developing, and finding those hidden gems. And Green Bay just has a complete knack for it. You can look up and down the entire roster at all of the different depth pieces, rotational pieces that are good football players that they've just found on day three, throwaways, all of it. They have all of it, and they've done a great job on it. Number two is their depth and specialization of playmakers. We've talked about it, but it still is pretty stunning to me that this team has so many players at the skill positions on offense that can affect this team in a positive way. From Christian Watson to Romeo Doubs to Dontavian Wicks to Bo Melton to Jaden Reed to Malik Heath, Ben Sims, Luke Musgrave, Tucker Kraft, Marshawn Lloyd, AJ Dillon, and of course, Josh Jacobs. That's 12 dudes right there. That is 12 players that can help you win football games every single week. And it's going to be a lot to feed all of those mouths. They're all going to be hungry. They're all going to want the rock. They're all going to want to be featured in some capacity. Maybe not Ben Sims, maybe not Malik Heath as much, but trust me, these guys still want to be involved in the offense in some capacity. And they have a lot of guys that are capable. They have a lot of guys that are talented. They've got a lot of guys who can do it. But the first of all, the fact that they have all of that depth, the fact that they have all of that playmaking is impressive in and of itself. But then that it's not redundant. And we've gone over this before, but I'm at the risk of repeating myself, I'm going to say it again. You've got your overall back in Josh Jacobs. You've got your speed back in Marshawn Lloyd. You've got your power back in AJ Dillon. You've got your overall tight end in Tucker Kraft. You've got your receiving tight end in Luke Musgrave. You've got more of a blocking tight end, who I actually think could be a little bit more than that, in Ben Sims. You've got your deep speed wide receiver in Christian Watson, your possession wide receiver in Romeo Doubs, your slot gadget. We can get him involved in a variety of different ways. Receiver in Jaden Reed. You've got your sort of Alan Lazard goon. We're going to do a lot of blocking and going over the middle in Malik Heath. Bo Melton, who can do some of the same stuff that Jaden Reed, but he's kind of a blend between kind of a Jaden Reed and a Christian Watson. Dontavian Wicks is your route running specialist. Like, you have one of everything. So it's not just that you are deep at these positions, it's that you are deep and you have versatile, unique pieces at each of those positions. And that is what's going to give Matt LaFleur a lot of his flexibility to use those guys at any way that he seems fit. Any way that he thinks he can attack an opposing defense, because there's sometimes you don't have those ingredients. You might say, man, I really wish we had a tight end that can get up the seam. Oh, we do. You, Luke Musgrave. Man, I really wish we had a tight end that, you know, isn't going to necessarily be a tell. He's not just a receiving guy. He can do some blocking as well. Can do some running. Oh yeah, we have that. Tucker Kraft. Wish we had a little bit more of a blocking. Yeah, Ben Sims. I wish we had a guy that could really power between the tackles and maybe truck somebody. All right, AJ Dillon. I wish we had a running back that could do a little bit of everything. All right, Josh Jacobs. I wish we had a speed running back. All right, Marshawn Lloyd. And we can go all of them one by one, but whatever that play calls for, whatever weakness the defense has, if it's against speed receivers, if it's against possession receivers, if it's against tight ends up the seam, if it's against tight ends on rollouts that you can get the ball in their hands and they can run after the catch, whatever it is, Green Bay has a solution to that problem, or they have an answer or a way to exploit that weakness on that opposing defense. And that is, to me, what is also a big time superpower for this overall team and specifically on their offense. Number three is the versatility all throughout the roster. We talk about best five on the offensive line and how all these guys can play so many different positions. Why that's important is you are going to have injuries throughout the course of the season. I'm a pretty big believer in the workforce and in general of kind of like specialization of skills. I think if you can kind of master something, it goes a little bit further than if you try to sometimes be a jack of all trades. But this is not a situation where you have a 90-man roster all throughout the season and you can really focus on specializing players. You've got a 53-man roster. A bunch of those guys are going to get hurt. You've got a 48-man game day roster, and you're going to have injuries even on game days. And you have to be able to fill positions with versatility and a lack of depth with those game day rosters. So what Green Bay does to cross-train their players, to make them versatile, and to just draft, you know, versatile players in the first place that can play a variety of different positions, that helps them a ton. At wide receiver, you have wide receivers that can play not just in the slot, but on the outside. They can play the X, the Y, the Z. They can do a little bit of everything, and they cross-train those guys at everything. On the offensive line, Elgton Jenkins, 4-5 position guy. Zach Tom, 5 position guy. A lot of the tackles can play both sides. Jordan Morgan's already cross-training at 4 different positions along the line. Sean Ryan's done left guard, center, and right guard. We can go on and on, but you know the names, you know the versatility. These guys can play a variety of different positions. They've got some off-ball linebackers that could kick inside if they wanted to. They've got some guys inside that could kick outside if they wanted to. Edgerrin Cooper, Quay Walker, Tyron Hopper. These are guys that can play any of those linebacker spots. If you do want to go more of a traditional Mike Sam Will, those guys can play a variety of those spots. Now, again, are they a perfect, you know, Sam linebacker? Not always. No, it's probably not their perfect forte, but can they do it in a pinch? Can they fill in that role? Yeah, absolutely. Corners that can play not only boundary, but can play in the slot as well. Safeties, Javon Bullard, somebody who can play post safety. They can play box safety. You can play in the slot. Xavier McKinney, same thing. Evan Williams, same thing. Ketan Oladapo can probably play some safety and some linebacker. Like these sort of things, Keyshawn Nixon can play offense, defense, and special teams. Both kick coverage, kick returns, punt returns, almost anything. So that level of versatility does wonders for you as you have injuries throughout the course of the season. I just think the Brian Gutekunst quote at the league meetings was so smart when he was talking about the linebackers and basically saying, you know, that specialization of skills. And as I say every time, I'm going to paraphrase this in a pretty significant way. But the way that I interpreted it was, you know, yeah, we could have a run-stopping linebacker and we could have a, you know, pass coverage linebacker and we could platoon those guys. And again, I'm very much paraphrasing here, but what's going to happen is one of those guys, let's say the run stopping guy gets hurt. And now the pass coverage guy has to play every single down. And now they're running the football and that guy can't stop the run because he's not big enough. He's not physical enough. He's not strong enough, whatever it might be. All right. Well, that doesn't help us, or vice versa. Your coverage guy goes down and you've got only your run stopping linebacker left to play. And now you've got Kyle Shanahan, you know, working up ways to get George Kittle and Kyle Juszczyk and wide receivers and everyone else on that linebacker who can't cover. And it's good night nurse. You're not going to be in a great position right then and there. So instead they're saying, we want a Quay Walker, an Edgerrin Cooper, a Tyron Hopper, guys that can do a little bit of everything. We'll cross train them. We'll get them up to speed. And we'll make sure that no matter who gets hurt, the other guys can step up and do the job no matter what. And that versatility all throughout the roster is important, and it absolutely pays dividends throughout the course of the season when those injuries do in fact hit. The NBA Finals are officially over, and congratulations to the Boston Celtics on winning the championship, as much as it pains me to say as a Milwaukee Bucks fan. But even though the NBA Finals are over, the hoops action doesn't stop on Prize Picks. Women's basketball is just getting started, and young stars like Caitlin Clark and Angel Reese are making names for themselves, and it's been the most talked about WNBA season ever. And you're not going to want to miss out on the action, period. And of course, with Prize Picks, you could win 100 times your cash watching stars like Breonna Stewart and Aja Wilson ball out every single week. Prize Picks is available in more than 30 states across the country, including California, Texas, Georgia, and of course, Wisconsin. Prize Picks is America's number one fantasy sports app with over 5 million active members. So join in on the fun and become part of the Prize Picks community today. I do have to say that I am a little bit bummed that Cameron Brink recently suffered a torn ACL, but I'm still super stoked to watch some WNBA action this week. I'm going to be going heavy on Arike Ogunbowale and Alyssa Thomas this week, and might be even on the lookout for some Kelsey Plum three-pointer options as well. Either way, it should be an exciting week of WNBA action that's even more exciting with Prize Picks. The best part is that you can download the Prize Picks app today and use code PACKADAY for a first deposit match up to $100. That's the Prize Picks app using code PACKADAY for a first deposit match up to $100. Prize Picks. Pick more, pick less. It's that easy. Number four, Matt LaFleur's play design and his ability to create mismatches. I do believe Matt is a very innovative offensive mind. I think there's certainly some copy and paste here from Matt, some control C, control V. I do think he, as he should, by the way, this is not an insult to Matt. I think he steals some really smart concepts from some really smart coaches and integrates them in the offense. But what I love about Matt is there are coaches that do this, and I won't name names here, but there are coaches that do this where they copy a little from here, they copy a little from here, they copy a little from here, and they sort of spam together or, you know, copy and paste together all of the, just the best ideas from all these different playbooks throughout the league. You might think that that sounds like a really good idea, but what happens is you don't have any cohesion. You don't have any backbone for your offense. You don't have any core concepts. You just have copied and pasted playbooks that are, you know, sort of stolen from other things that have been successful throughout the league. And don't get me wrong, you can absolutely do some of that. You can find a play that you like and you can integrate it into your offense, and teams do that every single freaking week. It is a copycat league, but you have to have your base concepts that you go off of, and the better coaches will take those concepts that they find throughout the league and merge them and meld them within their offense. And that's where Matt's really good at taking those ideas, but putting it in the context of what his team is already prepared for throughout the course of the season, in different formations that they already use, with the personnel that they already have. Like, that's the way that you integrate it. And that's what Matt's really good at. It's copying those great concepts without sort of just putting together this hodgepodge playbook that doesn't really have a backbone, doesn't really have a core concept. And that's where, again, I think Matt is really good. He also is great at reading defenses. I think he's one of the most prepared coaches at figuring out what defenses are going to do against him. Now, he will get thrown off from time to time, as every coach does. And I do think he can do a better job of making in-game adjustments. What game was I watching this past season? Oh, it was against Xavier McKinney and the Giants. They ran, I don't know how many end arounds and reverses and pop passes, and it did not work all game long. And then if you remember, they had the 2-point conversion opportunity that they needed to convert at the end of the game to, I think, go up three. I think they were up one, and the 2-point conversion was to go up by three. And what do they run? They run a little pop pass to Jaden Reed. It hadn't worked all day long, and surprise, surprise, it doesn't work against the Giants in that situation. They don't get the two. The Giants go down, I think, kick a game-winning. I know they obviously the Giants won. I think it was a game-winning field goal, though. And the rest was history. So I do think there's things that Matt can do to, all right, recognize some of those things that he thought were going to work weren't working, and you need to make those in-game adjustments. But overall, I do believe that his ability to find those mismatches, to attack the weaknesses of the defense, and to know the trends and the tendencies that other defensive coordinators are going to go with, and then how to attack those. He also does a great job of baking in, you know, sort of solutions to everything, so that if Jordan Love gets to the line and it's a run right, and, you know, they don't have the, like, it's set up to stop run right, he's got a pass on the backside, a little bit of a run solution there. That's a very watered down, simplified version of it, but he has things baked into the offense where if you don't get the ideal look, you can change out of it and you can have a play that's going to work against the defense that you're getting the look of. So I think he does a brilliant job. I think he's going to continue to do a brilliant job. And I think it is a true superpower of this team and of this offense. Number five, the gravity of Christian Watson. I'm not even necessarily talking here just about the playmaking ability of Christian Watson. I'm talking about his legitimate size and speed down the field, that will threaten defenses, that will make them aware of where he is on the field. You have to have guys like this. You have to have guys that can take the top off of a defense and that really open things up underneath for your other players. Christian Watson, when he's on the field, without even catching a pass, will make things easier for Luke Musgrave and Tucker Kraft, Bo Melton, Jaden Reed, Dontavian Wicks, Malik Heath, Josh Jacobs, all of them. He will open up that offense just based on his gravity and pulling safeties and corners down the field. If you don't have that, go back to when Jordy tore his ACL. And I remember it as clear as day. They were playing against the Rams, and I was in my end zone seats in my season tickets, and I was watching, and the Rams came out in cover one, and you did not ever go cover one against Aaron at that point. You would never, ever go cover one against Aaron because he will beat you down the field with his arm every single time. The receivers will get releases, and you're just going to throw sideline routes all day. You're going to throw back shoulder. You're going to throw everything. And Rodney McLeod sitting in single high safety, and he's like 15, 20 yards off the ball. And I'm like, good luck, Rams. You're in for a very long day because Aaron's just going to rip you apart. But he didn't. The Packers got away with a win that day. They did not play good football. The Rams had actually a great defensive game plan. What you saw, and really the first real sign of kryptonite for Aaron Rodgers as he went through some of the struggles when Jordy went down, they didn't have a receiver that could win deep on the outsides. They didn't have that guy that could press down the field. That connection with Jordy down the field that was just automatic so many times, and Greg Jennings before that with Aaron, they didn't have that guy. They had a lot of possession wide receivers, some slower wide receivers, and wide receivers on the outside that, quite frankly, the defense just wasn't worried about. And how they played it, Rodney McLeod was in that single high, making sure no big plays. They pressed on the outside. They pressed in the slot. There was no easy throws to be made. They were aggressive up front. They had multiple players in the box. They had a box safety in, so you couldn't run the ball. You were outnumbered in the running game. The receivers struggled to get off of press man coverage on the outside. And in the odd chance that they did, Rodney McLeod was there to clean it up. And it was sort of the first time that a team really put together a game plan against Aaron that worked well. And then the rest of the league started to copy and paste it. If you have a Christian Watson on that team, that never happens. Aaron still got that deep threat down the field and everything else opens up because of it. But Green Bay didn't. They didn't have that deep threat, not a consistent one. And it really changed the offense. It changed the way that defenses played against the offense. And the offense was far less effective than it ever had been in the past. And it took until Davante Adams kind of had that breakout and was such an unbelievable player that things kind of got back to normal for Aaron, and he won two more MVPs. So Christian's ability to open things up for the rest of the offense just by existing out on the field is an important trait. Now, his kryptonite is injuries, and he's got to find a way to mitigate that and stay on the field. But when he is on the field, make no mistake, he has a superpower. Teams are aware of it, and they do not want to get beat by it. Number six, Jaire Alexander's man-to-man coverage ability. Not only is this a superpower, it is a legitimate big-time reason why I think this Jeff Hafley defense has a real opportunity to succeed. You've got to have a guy that can match up man-to-man. If you're going to go blitz heavy, if you're going to go aggressive, if you're going to go press man on the outside, you better have a really good corner that can stick in man-to-man coverage against some of these really good wide receivers throughout the league. Because if you don't, they're just going to smoke you off the line. They're going to get big gains, and you're going to have to go zone coverage in a second, in milliseconds. You're going to have to change things up immediately. But the fact that they have a Jaire Alexander who has that coverage ability, who can match up with really good wide receivers like Justin Jefferson, and I'm not saying he's going to win those every time, but he's going to make it competitive. He's going to make it hard on those wide receivers, and that quarterback's going to look over, and he's going to say, Jaire's covering him. I don't know if I want to throw that way. So his coverage ability, his fluid hips, his ability to change direction, we need to get back to that a little bit with Jaire, but I do think in this defense, when they start asking him to play a bit more man-to-man, I do think that's going to be something that opens him up for far more success, and I think we're going to see that superpower that's sort of been dormant within him because his previous defensive coordinator didn't allow him to use it, basically stifled it. Now he's got it back, and I think it's going to pay huge dividends for Green Bay. Number seven's an interesting one. Rashawn Gary's ability to convert speed to power. When he bull rushes, it is a nightmare for offensive tackles. They struggle to anchor against him. He will collapse offensive tackles into the pocket all day, every day. He is a, like I said, a nightmare to have to face as an offensive tackle because he will go through your face and there's not much you can do about it. Now, there's a couple guys in the league that can anchor well enough and manage it. But for the most part, a lot of these tackles, pass heavy offense, they're what, 300, 305, quick feet, and Rashawn Gary can just bench press him right back into the QB. The issue with this superpower for Rashawn is he sometimes forgets that he's a speed to power guy, that he's a bull rusher, and he wants to be a speed rusher. All right. He's the Hulk, but sometimes he thinks he's the Flash. I don't know how many more lame cliche superhero things I can get in this episode, but I am going to try my darndest to keep doing it. But yeah, so he's the Hulk, but sometimes he thinks he's the Flash. And when he tries to do super speed, he just doesn't have it. He doesn't have that bendability around the edge, and the offensive tackles are just able to pick him up a little bit easier. In sort of long story short mode here, he's making the job easier for the offensive tackles by trying to be a speed rusher rather than going right through somebody's face. But when he does go through somebody's face, when he does convert speed to power, when he does bull rush people, he's a nightmare. And it is a absolute bear to have to go against. And I can't even imagine, as like, there are very few things that Miles Garrett, Max Crosby, there are a few, but that strength and that speed coming at you a million miles per hour. Go watch the recent videos that Rashawn's been posting. He's a menace. He is a freak and in all the best ways. And when he comes at you right at your face and says, I'm going to go right through you, that's when, as an offensive tackle, you start worrying about your day. So it is a legit superpower, but he mitigates it and minimizes it by not utilizing it as much as he should. I'm hoping that changes this upcoming season. Next up, this might be premature. This might be a little too early, but I'm going to say it anyway. Edgerrin Cooper's first step explosiveness. It is different. It is unique. It is special. His speed flashes at practice. It flashed off the tape from Texas A&M. I believe that it is going to be something that serves him insanely well and is a huge change of pace for this defense. We talked about that first year for Quay Walker, that first year All-Pro. That was a huge signing. He was so good that season. But these past couple of years, it has not been the same. And specifically this past year, Devondre just fell off. He did not have the same speed. He lost a step and a half, and it was pretty evident. Now, maybe he gets that back in San Francisco. We'll see. I know he seems to be very happy in San Fran, happy to be out of Green Bay. Sounds like he thought maybe they didn't utilize him correctly. Yeah, I disagree with that, but I do think that he wasn't quite as fleet of foot as he was in that first year in Green Bay. And now you get a linebacker that is going to be immediately one of the fastest linebackers in the league, who's already showing some good instincts. That's going to be unique. That's going to be different. And that's going to be a true superpower for Jeff Hafley to utilize. Next up, this may be lame. This may be cliche. This may be, I don't even know what you want to call it. Probably just lame. But I'm going to the locker room. There's a reason why Ted Thompson wanted to draft quote unquote Packer people. He felt like building that locker room, having guys that he could trust and having guys that were obsessed about football was going to be what was in the best interest of this team as a whole. And I think there's a chance that this is one of the best locker rooms that the Packers have ever assembled. I think these guys are hungry. I think they're motivated. I think they're in it for the right reasons. I do think they eat, drink, sleep, breathe football. And I think they're going to be ultra motivated to keep getting better and better and better and better. Not to equate this to youth sports. I think that's a little bit lame and cliche as well, but I coach my son's youth soccer team, and we've gone over the past year from a team that has struggled at times to a team that is now playing up an age group and are, I think, what, 15-1 on the season now? And the reason for that, I would love just to say, is clearly my coaching. The reason is because they are the hungriest group of 10, 9, and 8-year-old soccer players, 10 and 9-year-old soccer players that I have ever seen in my life. They cannot get enough. They are constantly training, constantly working at it, constantly going to special practices. They eat, sleep, breathe, drink soccer. And it shows. They have gone up exponentially in the past year and a half because of all the time, effort, and energy that they're putting into it. And that's just life. When you input that much, your output is going to be that much greater. And I believe that's going to be the case in Green Bay. They are inputting a ton of amazing stuff with what is, by all accounts, from what we hear from the coaching staff, LaFleur, Goody, Jordan Love, everyone, of how this group is that motivated, that they're diving into the playbook, that they're all showing up to OTAs, that they're all supporting each other. This wide receiver group is not trying to snipe snaps or touchdowns from each other. They're all celebrating each other when they get the touchdown or when the other person gets the touchdown. It's a special group. And I do think that breeds success. I think that breeds winning. I think that breeds wanting to be the best. And I think a lot of times that can breed something special. I'm hopeful. Vibes are just vibes. We'll have to kind of see it come to fruition. But those seeds are planted. You have something special growing. And hopefully it does sprout into something. There's some really lame cliches today, guys. I am on one. And hopefully it does sprout into something that does become something really amazing. And because I think it can, I really, truly think it can. And I do think that is something that is truly special about this team. All right, a few more before we get out of here. Kenny Clark's leverage and technique, just so fun to watch. He plays with phenomenal leverage. He gets in inside on the pads. He gets underneath. He plays low. He plays with great pad level. We can, you know, make fun of the Mike McCarthyisms here. Fundamentals, pad level, you know, all of them. But Kenny Clark embodies it. And that's why he wins. Like Kenny, if you look at Kenny, right? This is not some 330-pound guy that can just win because he's massive or like 6'6". You know, you think of your Chris Joneses. Think of your DeForest Buckners. Like, he's not that, right? He's not just like this unbelievable Calais Campbell in his prime. That's not who Kenny is, all right? He's not Aaron Donald. He's not Geno Atkins. He's not Fletcher Cox in his prime. He's not these guys that can immediately explode upfield. He's not like a Dexter Lawrence who has this unbelievable blend of size and quickness. That's not Kenny either. Kenny is a really good athlete, but he wins on technique. And that is a true superpower of his. And he had it from really such a young age. It's why he was able to be as good as he was early in his career when he was so young. He focused on the details. And it's like I said, he's been one of my favorite players to watch year in and year out because he is winning with that. And sometimes it's a little bit more of a slow burn. Sometimes it takes him a little bit longer to get to the QB. He's not like this, you know, 12 sack per season guy or anything like that. But my goodness, do his contributions sometimes go underappreciated. And he is a constant cog in the middle of that defense that is working for good and doing everything he can to bring this defense up and be the best that it can be. It hasn't always been enough, but it's not due to lack of energy, intensity, physicality, and sort of, again, the leverage and technique that Kenny Clark displays week in and week out through the entirety of his career at this point. Number 11 might be one that surprises you a little bit. Carl Brooks and his sort of go-to move. He has a quickness out of his stance, does a little bit of a sidestep quickly, gets his arm over, and then just explodes upfield. And he has the timing down. He has the quickness down exactly when to get his arm over and swipe the opposing offensive lineman's arm. And before you know it, he's in the backfield. Now, over time, as teams become more familiar with him and are going to make sure that they shut down that move, he's going to have to work some counters into it. But it is... like, you know, he mastered one very unique, I don't want to say unique. It's not that unique. It's not like other people don't use it, but he mastered that specific move and it is a go-to move and it works incredibly well. And sometimes he gets shut down with it. Sometimes he'll go for the arm over and offensive line will just get under him and forklift him or whatever they need to do to kind of make it so that it mitigates that rush. But man, 2-3 times a game, he'll set it up. That move will work. He does it perfectly, and he's disruptive into the backfield. And that's sometimes all you need is just those 3, 4, 5 disruptive plays. He might spam that move a little bit too much, but it is a special move. And if I think a lot of people could do it to the level that he could, I think they'd be spamming it too. He might not be that pitcher right now. Another really beautiful cliche here, but he might not be that pitcher that has 2, 3, 4 great pitches at his arsenal, but he's got one pitch that is near unhittable. And it's not quite that because he gets blocked every once in a while, obviously, with it. But he's got that one pitch. And that pitch is really, really good. And even though you might know it's coming, he's mastered it to the point where even if you know it's coming, it's still really hard to stop. And I think it is actually one of the superpowers on this team. And then last but not least, number 12 on my list is just Jordan Love. I don't have a Jordan Love's arm strength or Jordan Love's accuracy or Jordan Love's ad lib ability, his athleticism. I don't have that one thing for Jordan. I don't know yet, because we've only had one season really, like what his true best trait is going to be. I do think his ad lib ability, I think his ability to throw off platform, I think his arm talent is there, but I don't know that there's that one thing where you're just like, oh my goodness, he is unbelievable at this one thing. But the total package is still a superpower. And listen, in this league, you have to have a franchise QB. Just having a franchise QB is a cheat code or a superpower in and of itself. And the Packers have found theirs in Jordan Love. And that is, like I said, its own superpower. It's its own thing that gives you a puncher's chance at a Superman puncher's chance at a Super Bowl every single year. And with Brett, even though they had that puncher's chance every year, it only got them one. Only. With Aaron, they had that chance every year, got them one. With Jordan, we'll see. Maybe he'll be the guy that gets more than one. Maybe he's the guy that plays great and just doesn't get any. We don't know. But having him on the team and what he's capable of is something that, again, gives you that opportunity to compete for a playoff spot in Super Bowl year in and year out. And even in his first year as a starter with an extremely young team, they were right in that conversation at the end and were a couple plays away from going to the NFC Championship. So those are the 12 positives. The Packers front office and their ability to find good players, depth and specialization of playmakers, versatility, Matt LaFleur's play designing and ability to create mismatches, the gravity of Christian Watson, Jair's coverage, man coverage skills, I should say, Rashawn Gary's ability to convert speed to power, Edgerrin Cooper's first step explosiveness, the locker room, Kenny Clark's leverage and technique, Carl Brooks's go-to move, and just Jordan Love, just Jordan freaking Love. They do have one kryptonite, however, and it's something that we need to discuss. It's an important one. The big thing, their biggest kryptonite, hamstrings. Say it in jest, I'm kidding. Hopefully they got that all figured out, and hopefully we don't see any hamstring injuries in 2024. That would be very, very nice. The big thing, can the Packers play to those superpowers? Like we kind of talked about with Rashawn Gary, it's great if you have them, but you need to use them, all right? You've got to figure out ways to implement them in a very important way, because they are something that sets you apart as a playmaker. And then the next question is, can new superpowers develop? We didn't even talk about Josh Jacobs, Xavier McKinney, Dontavian Wicks, Devontae Wyatt, Quay Walker, etc. There are multiple players that we could have talked about that can do some special things. Can they develop some things that are really going to take this team to the next level? And like I said, now it's time to unlock those talents and be not just a group of individuals with superpowers, but a super team that can win a Super Bowl. That is going to do it for me today. Thank you so much for joining me. Always appreciate you guys. Shout out to our Hall of Fame and All-Pro members, Most Hated Minnesotan, PJ Wynn, John Wild, Shea Bradad, Brandon Paletta, Jennifer Wright, Boom Handle, Donald Lee, Lori Lord, Baby QB, David McCluskey, Donald Decker, Bremen, Dan Miller, Alex Wong, Arnaldo Espinoza, and Dan Gasford. I'll see you tomorrow, but until next time, and as always, go Pack Go.